Hi friends, we move on to the next chapter of import-export management, and here we are looking at the financial management of import and export. I need not stress the important aspect of finance. Without finance, you and me, we are not into business at all. But as far as import-export is concerned, it is a totally different cup of tea. Topics that we are covering is, we start with our own currency. That is our Indian currency. How it is a legal tender as far as international relationships are concerned. Then we look at import-export financing. Then we look at the foreign exchange or forex. And then we look at certain guidelines. FEMA, Foreign Exchange Management Act of Reserve Bank of India, has formulated certain guidelines for imports and certain guidelines for exports. And then we look at two other arms which are helpful to us as far as the import-export finances are concerned. One is ECGC Limited, that is Export Credit Guarantee Corporation Limited. And the second one is the Export-Import Bank of India, or Exim Bank. I don't need to highlight our Indian rupee at all. You are well aware that our Indian rupee is a legal tender throughout India. But at the same time, it's also legal tender in our neighboring countries like Nepal and Bhutan. Yes, you go to Nepal, take your Indian rupees only. They will accept it. Buy anything. Give Indian rupees, they will accept it. Same way you go to Bhutan, go with Indian currency. Don't go with their local currency. Your Indian currency is more preferable in these two countries than their local currency. When we come back to our own Indian rupee, at one time it was a totally protected rupee. A totally protected means of finance. But with the given of time, liberalization methodology, the rupee was converted to the current account with only some capital controls. Where Reserve Bank of India intervenes in the foreign exchange market only to curb the excess volatility of the exchange rate vis-a-vis the foreign currency. Each currency has got a different rate vis-a-vis the next currency. And due to market forces, they are volatile. The exchange rates fluctuate very often. So just to control the excessive volatility, Reserve Bank of India will intervene. Otherwise, no, freely convertible. After transition of current account convertible, the value of rupee is largely determined by market forces. Not only in the international market, but here in India also. The value of rupee, what it was, if you look at 20, 25 years back, it's not the same value today. You cannot get the same thing at the same, you may get at the same price, but quantity, no. You are getting less quantity. So the value of the rupee, what they can give you in practical terms, is totally different. And Why? They are determined by the market forces.
Friends, when we look at the financial angle today, what we see is movement of digital money. What is digital money? Digital money is improving the process for all monetary transactions. You are not using cash at all. Card payment, your wallet, e-wallet through your mobile payment, these are all digital money. It's not physical cash at all. Technological rails of digital money can make currency transfers across the borders and faster as compared to standard money. This you will find more helpful as far as your import-export transactions are concerned. Previously, when you would send your export bills to the importer in the other countries, the payment would have to go bank to bank via SWIFT method of transfer of money. This was all time consuming. Now, with the occurrence of the technological trail of digital money, the currency transfers through the digital mode is very fast and on a 24/7, 365 basis. Streamlining the process, implementing of this monetary policy for the central banks has become a priority for several governments around the world. All the governments have had to adopt this methodology for making their bank transfers faster through the digital money transaction. And more forms of digital currencies now are competing for virality in the international trade. There are different forms of money transactions coming out in the form of digital money. The launch of CBDC, Central Bank Digital Currencies, wire transport systems enables the movement of cash across the borders. Each central government is now adopting through their central bank a central bank digital currency, and movement is on the basis of those digital currency through wire transfers directly bank to bank basis. The aim of digital money is to do away with the time lag. We don't have time as far as money transfers are concerned, and operating cost for transactions. And they are using the blockchain technology that is known as distribution ledger technology. This technology is allowing movement of financial across borders without human intervention. It's known as block technology movement. Money could be sent and received within seconds and around the clock, and at a lesser cost of transaction. The payment ledgers of the digital currencies could be used to share payment and financial history to underwrite loans for import and export. All importers, exporters, they need a lot of loans, and banks underwrite the loans. So this digital technology ledger is easing the method of the underwriting of loan facilities. Advancement of payment technology needs to be accompanied by the digitization trade. Trade, that means you exporters and importers have got to digitize your transactions, study the methodology, adopt the methodology, and comply it continuously. It's a digitization of trade. Trades in goods and services are more and more digitized and needs to provide the right infrastructure for accessible and affordable connectivity. Of course, this digitization requires a different kind of infrastructure for ease of movement, transfers of digitization methodologies. And that infrastructure has to be created, one side by the government, by the banks, including you. You have got to digitize yourself also.
When we look at import-export financing, the business finance which you require for your transactions, they mainly refer to the funds and monetary support required by you as an entrepreneur. The amount of capital needed by you depends on the nature and size of the business that you want to do. A proprietorship concern will need less capital to start with, whereas a private limited company or a public limited company will need more capital to start with. For regulating the operations of the money market also, the Reserve Bank of India is the supreme authority. And major constituents of the Indian finance system are banks, financial institutions, non-banking financial companies, and most important, venture capital companies. We in India should be very happy that we have a sound financial structure which is capable of providing us with a strong base for setting up a business unit in whichever scale that we want, whether small, medium or large. The most preferred form of payment in the foreign trade transaction is the documentary credit, or what you may be hearing here and there, LC, that is letter of credit. Here, the buyer's bank, of course, documentary credits are bank-to-bank document. The buyer's bank will reimburse the seller through the seller's bank against presentation of documents drawn in compliance with the conditions stipulated in the documentary credit by the buyer. Buyer will open a documentary credit in favor of the seller, but he will put certain conditions for compliance. They'll be stipulated in the documentary credit. And the seller has to ensure that he has got to satisfy those conditions as stipulated. And after the shipment is over, after exporting the goods, he will present the required set of documents to his bank to be forwarded to the buyer's bank, and he gets his reimbursement. This is the advantages to both buyer and seller, because settlement is done through the bank. First, the buyer knows that payment will only be made if documents received by the bank, they comply strictly with the terms and conditions of the credit as stipulated by the buyer. And here the buyer stipulates two very major documents which can satisfy him that yes, goods have been exported. One is the export invoice, and two is the shipping company's bill of lading issued by a shipping company, or airway bill issued by an airline, that yes, goods have been handed over to them for onward shipment. These documents are presented to the bank, and buyer knows that only when these documents are presented to the bank, then seller will receive his payments, otherwise seller will not get his payment. Secondly, the seller knows that his payment is safe and he will receive the payment provided he sticks to the terms and conditions of the credit and they comply with the terms strictly. So both of them are happy, both of them have got an advantage as far as import-export is concerned, as far as international business is concerned. Yes, as a firm for import-export, you need credits. You may need a short-term credit, or you may need a medium-term credit, or you may need long-term credit, depending on the size of the business that you want to do. And there are different forms of credit, supplier's credit extended to the exporter, but they may also be extended as buyer's credit to be extended to the importer. The risk on these credits, as well as guarantees and insurance, is borne by the sponsoring government. Each government sponsors the risk factor. Exporters require a certain amount of financial assistance for execution of the export order right from the day. Why day they get the order, even before they get the order. And this finance, of course, will depend on the type of goods to be executed and also based on the overseas buyer's requirements. Amount can vary based on the requirements from short term to long term. The first and foremost finance for any exporter is the pre-shipment finance known as packing credit. You approach any bank, your bank, wherever you have an account. After opening a current account showing that you have become an exporter and you have received a firm export order, your bank can provide you with packing credit for purchasing raw material or goods, processing them into finished products, storage, packing, marking of goods prior to shipment, up to the level of shipment. Mind you, it is approved only when you have a firm order from a foreign importer. This finance is granted for a period of 180 days, as it's a part of working capital also. It can be extended to further 90 days also. Reserve Bank of India has simplified rules for credit to exporters, through which they can now get long-term advances from banks for up to 10 years to service their contracts. And this is helping the exporters to enter into long-term contracts, which is helping them in their overall export performance. Yes, you want to enter export? Here is the first arm for you. Post-shipment finance. Your packing credit or pre-shipment finance is over the moment you place the goods for export. They are loaded on board the ship. You get the shipping document from the steamer company or the airline, bill of lading, airway bill, etc., along with the invoice. You give it to your bank. Now, banks, looking to the terms and conditions, they may need anywhere from 1 week to maybe 3 months also to receive the payment, depending on the terms and conditions. Here, the post-shipment finance helps you. Exporter will give this bill to the bank and request the bank to transfer this under post-shipment finance. Bank will purchase the bill or collect the bill or even discount the bill, and they will give up to an extent of 90% of the bill amount to the exporter. Out of this, the 75% which has been granted under pre-shipment finance is adjusted, and balance 15% is given to the exporter. Why? Because they needed to pay wages for all other activities, including shipping charges, advertising charges, and other overseas marketing, promotion expenses, etc., etc. So this 15% covers these factors. The finance or loan can also be obtained by exporters bills which have been raised against LC or documentary credit issued by importer or overseas companies. Even if you have an LC, you don't have the money in your hand. Give the letter of credit to your bank and first stage take a bank credit. Subsequently, convert it to post-shipment credit. There are various other forms of finance available also. One of them, deferred export finance. This finance is available to importers or overseas buyers to facilitate import of goods. Mind you, this is not for exporters, but exporters connect them to their importers, and banks can give deferred export finance to those importers. They are basically suppliers' finance provided to the exporter by the exporter's bank to sell the goods on installment basis. Or buyer's finance also, finance is provided to an overseas buyer by the exporting company, where the bank will make full payment to the exporter and will not recover any shortfall from the exporter but from the buyer. Collateral is the buyer. Again, as an exporter, you get a lot of subsidies in terms of duty drawback, etc., etc. I'll explain to you when we go into the regulatory functions. Now, these are granted after your export shipment is completed, and it may take anywhere from maybe 15 days to 3 months. Here also, you can ask for export finance from your bank against these subsidies. Yes, it is allowed. Banks do give you. Whatever methodology you have your bank, go to them. They will grant you finance against subsidies. Our foreign trade, import, export business is done by two different countries. And both the countries have got different legal tender. We have rupees, America has got US dollars. Now, if we sell the goods to America, they don't have rupees to give it to you. They have got US dollars to give it to you. So they give you US dollars. What will you do? Your bank will exchange this and give you Indian rupees. This is foreign exchange or forex. That is conversion of one country's currency into that of another. We have a free economy and each currency is valued according to factions of supply and demand. All the countries which are into import and export trade have got free flowing currencies. But when you do business, then the currency value has to be pegged with the other country's currency. And then an exchange rate is available depending on the country's currency value, which was our own country's currency value. These values are sometimes fixed by the country government or market oriented. Most countries will float their currencies freely against those of other countries. So they are in constant fluctuation. Value of any particular currency is determined by market forces based on investment, tourism, that is incoming outgoing of the foreign exchange, free flow of various currencies. That is where you have got a foreign exchange requirement. In India, we have got foreign exchange controls. Reserve Bank of India under FEMA has applied certain controls. Foreign company will have to make payment to the local company in their local currency. And another important factor of demand occurs when a foreign company seeks to do business with a company in a specific country. Then also foreign exchange control is involved. And therefore, it is desirable for investor from one country to invest in another country, and that investment would have to be made in the local currency over there. That basically means that in India, if we Indians want to invest in some company in a foreign country, we cannot invest Indian currency. We have got to get the local currency, and for that we need to purchase the currency of that country. And these requirements, they create a need for foreign exchange. And these are the main reasons why foreign exchange markets are so very large. All foreign exchange transactions are handled globally between banks. And all these banks, international banks, fall under the auspices of BIS, Bank of International Settlements. Just like in India, you have got many different banks, they issue their checks. But those checks are going to Reserve Bank of India for settlement. In the same way, on an international level, your foreign currency settlement of the banks is done through Bank of International Settlements. These controls are various forms of controls imposed by a government on all types of foreign currency transactions. And common controls are there in most of the countries, not only our own country. All foreign trade transactions to be routed only through banking channels. Usage of foreign currency within the country is banned. Possessing local currency by others, foreign companies or foreign personnel is banned. Or locals also possessing foreign currency is banned. Restricting currency exchange to government approved exchanges or authorized dealers. All banks cannot exchange currencies, foreign currencies. Banks have authorized dealers. They are known as authorized dealers category 1 bank. And only such branches which have got a AD code, authorized dealers code, issued by Reserve Bank of India in India, they can deal with foreign currencies. And of course, tourists and passengers, there is a restrictions on amount of currency that may be imported or exported. IMF International Monetary Fund agreement allows exchange controls for transitional economies. Transitional economies are those economies where they have got a problem in their currency exchange. Later, they enter into free trade and we started globalizing a very long time back. And this trend, which we had, I would say, around 1992 onwards, we have taken vast steps. Similarly, other countries who are backward countries are even now taking steps to liberalize their economy. Here in India, all foreign exchange transactions are controlled by Reserve Bank of India under Foreign Exchange Management Act 1999, that is short FEMA. All importers, exporters have to open an account with a bank branch designated as an authorized dealer in foreign exchange category 1 bank by the RBI, and such banks should have a valid AD code number issued by RBI. And importers, exporters have got to transact all their foreign trade through these accounts only and no other accounts. Thank you.